Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about the smallest airplane that ever stole a crowd, and the woman who flew it upside down close enough to the grass that you could have reached up and touched her landing gear. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and you're listening to The Hangar, where we keep the old stories warm. And today we're going back to the years right after the Second World War, to a little red and white biplane named Little Stinker, and a young lady from Pensacola, Florida named Betty Skelton. Now, before I get rolling, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on today. This show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating all the way up the ladder. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And friends, this whole segment is about a story worth telling, so that fits just right. Go have a look. AviationSoul.com. All right, let me set the scene. It's the late 1940s. The war's over, the boys are home, and all across America there are county fairgrounds and grass airfields where on a Sunday afternoon, a few thousand people would spread blankets on the ground, crack open a thermos, and tip their heads back to watch airplanes, do things airplanes weren't strictly supposed to do. This was the golden age of the airshow circuit, not the polished, fenced-off jet noise affairs we have now. I mean a guy with a war surplus airplane, a borrowed announcer, and enough nerve to loop it low. The smell of cut grass and hot castor oil. Mosquitoes coming up out of the ditch as the sun got low, a loudspeaker crackling so bad you could barely understand the fella calling the axe, and into that world walks Betty Skelton. Now here's where it gets interesting. Betty grew up in Pensacola, Florida, which if you know your Navy is about as much an aviation town as exists in this country. Naval Air Station Pensacola, the cradle of naval aviation. As a little girl, she'd lie out in the yard and watch the yellow trainers from the base buzz overhead. Those big radial engine biplanes the Navy taught its cadets on, and she decided right then that the sky belonged to her. She soloed an airplane at 12 years old. 12. Now I have to be honest with you. That was not, strictly speaking, legal. You couldn't get a license at 12 then or now. But her folks were flyers, the airport was a friendly place, an instructor turned a kind eye, and one fine day a 12-year-old girl took an Aeronca off the grass by herself, flew the pattern, and set it back down. She got her license the day the law would finally allow it, at 16. By the time she was a young woman, she was teaching, ferrying, doing whatever flying anybody would let her do. But Betty didn't want to fly straight and level. She wanted to dance. She started flying aerobatics in a Great Lakes biplane, a pretty open cockpit two-seater, and she started showing up on that airshow circuit I was just describing, and she got good. Not good for a woman? Good. She won the International Feminine Aerobatic Championship in 1948, then she won it again in 1949, then she won it a third time in 1950. 3 years running, nobody could touch her, but it's the airplane she found that makes this a story you'll remember. Let me pour you another cup and tell you about Little Stinker. Down in Florida, there was a quiet, brilliant fellow named Curtis Pitts, and in the years right around the end of the war, Curtis Pitts sat down and designed about the smallest, lightest, most responsive aerobatic airplane anybody had ever dreamed up, a single-seat biplane, stubby little wings, a tail that turned on a dime. The whole airplane weighed about as much as a couple of big motorcycles. They called it the Pitts Special, and that little airplane would go on to dominate aerobatic competition for decades. There are pilots flying Pitts Specials at air shows this very summer. But back then it was brand new, and almost nobody had one. Betty got one of the early ones. A tiny thing, registration number, November 22 Echo. She painted it red and white, and she named it Little Stinker, and friends, the two of them together were something else.
Here's the thing about a little airplane like that. The controls are so light, so quick, that the airplane practically reads your mind. You don't fly it so much as wear it. Roll rate, that'll snap your head. A airplane that small in the hands of somebody as precise as Betty Skelton could do things that bigger, heavier airplanes simply could not. And that brings me to the maneuver that made her famous, the inverted ribbon cut. Now, let me paint this for you, because I want you to feel it the way that crowd on the grass felt it. Picture two poles stuck in the ground out in front of the crowd line. Between them, stretched tight, a paper ribbon, and that ribbon is not way up in the sky, it's strung about 10, 12 feet off the deck, about the height of a basketball hoop, lower than the roof of your house. The act is this. The pilot is going to fly through that gap between those poles and cut the ribbon with the airplane. That alone would make most of us sweat through our shirts. 12 feet off the ground at airshow speed, threading between two poles. No room for error in any direction. But Betty Skelton didn't fly through it right side up. She rolled Little Stinker over onto its back, and she flew through that ribbon inverted. Upside down, Canopy pointed at the grass. Her head, hanging in the straps, was closer to the ground than the top of the airplane was. She'd come screaming in across the field, roll inverted, settle that little biplane down into the gap, and clip the ribbon with the part of the airplane now pointing at the sky, which inverted means the landing gear and the belly.
Think about what that takes. Upside down, every instinct is backwards. Pull the stick and the nose goes toward the ground, which inverted is toward the sky. The controls are reversed in your gut. You're hanging in your harness, blood running into your head, dust and loose grit from the cockpit floor falling up into your face. You're judging your height above the grass while looking up at it through the top of the canopy. And you have got to hold that airplane within a foot or two of a height you cannot afford to get wrong, because below you is hard Florida ground and above you, technically below you, is a paper ribbon you have come to cut. She did it again and again all over the country, and the crowd would come up off those blankets every single time. Let me tell you what that would have been like to stand and watch. You'd hear her before you'd see her. That little engine wound up tight, coming around from behind the crowd. Then she'd come into view low across the field and roll, and that red and white airplane would flip onto its back smooth as anything, and the whole field would go quiet for a half a second, the way crowds do when they're not sure they should be watching this. And then snap, through the ribbon, and the announcer would lose his mind on that crackly loudspeaker, and the noise of the crowd would roll across the grass like a wave. She was tiny, by the way. Betty Skelton was about 5'3". She'd climb out of that little airplane, and people couldn't believe the size of what they'd just seen matched up against the size of the person who'd done it. And here's a detail I love. She almost always flew with her little dog, a bulldog. He had his own spot. The whole package was just irresistible. The young woman, the smallest airplane on the field, the dog, and then this maneuver that made grown men hold their breath. Now, I called this a hangar story, and I want to do right by it. So let me tell you, it didn't stop there, because Betty Skelton was not just an airshow act, she was one of the most quietly remarkable people aviation ever produced. She set a light plane altitude record, taking a small airplane up over 25,000, 29,000 feet, in an open or barely closed cockpit, freezing, fighting for breath, just to prove what the airplane and the pilot could do. She flew that kind of record setting at a time when a lot of folks figured a woman's place was anywhere but the cockpit of a record attempt. And when the airshow world started to wind down for her, she didn't slow down one bit. She went and set automobile land speed records out on the salt and the sand. She became a test driver. She got so wrapped up in firsts of every kind that the press started calling her the First Lady of Firsts. And in the late 1950s, when this country was just beginning to dream about sending people into space, Betty Skelton went through some of the very same physical testing the first astronaut candidates went through. She was on the cover of the magazines The Woman Who Might Go to Space. The program didn't take women then, and that's a heartache for another show. But understand, the same nerve that flew Little Stinker upside down 12 feet off the grass is the nerve that put her in that conversation. But let me bring us back to the airplane, because this is where the story turns warm. Little Stinker, that red and white Pitts, special, that tiny airplane that thrilled all those crowds, did not get scrapped, it did not rot in a field, it survived, and it was restored, beautifully, lovingly, back to the way Betty flew it, red and white and gleaming. And today, if you walk into the Stephen F. Udvar Hazy Center, the great big companion hangar to the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum out near Dulles, you can find Little Stinker. And here's the part that'll get you. They didn't hang it up there flying along right side up like every other airplane in the building. They hung Little Stinker inverted upside down. The way Betty flew through that ribbon so that everybody who walks under it sees exactly what those crowds on the grass saw, a little airplane on its back, belly to the sky, frozen forever in the moment that made it famous.
I've stood under it. And I'll tell you, you don't need to know one thing about aerobatics to feel it. You just look up at that little red and white airplane hanging upside down, and you understand somehow that somebody very brave and very good once flew that thing about as low to the ground as a human being can fly upside down and live to do it again next Sunday. So here's why I wanted to tell you all this today. We talk a lot about the big iron on this show. The warbirds, the bombers, the fighters, and I love every rivet of them. But the soul of the airshow, the real soul, was never about how big the airplane was. It was about a person and a machine doing something honest and difficult and beautiful, right there in front of you, close enough to feel the prop wash. Betty Skelton, in the smallest airplane on the field, beat that crowd's heart faster than any four-engine bomber ever could, because they could see her, they could see what it cost.
And they could see that she wasn't afraid. Next time you're at a show and some aerobatic pilot rolls inverted and comes down low across the crowd line, I want you to think of a 5'3" young woman from Pensacola,
a little red biplane named Little Stinker, and a paper ribbon 12 feet off the grass. My thanks to the folks at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, whose care for Little Stinker keeps Betty's story hanging right where we can all see it, and to the air show historians who've kept the rest of it alive. You can always find us at radiohangar.com. This is Tail Dragger. Keep the shiny side up. Unless you're Betty Skelton, in which case, by all means, don't.